This is the Future Great City Podcast from NextSTL.com. Today, we're joined by Scott Ogilvie, alderman for the 24th Ward in the city of St. Louis. Twice elected, Scott has become known for asking difficult policy questions of the city and his colleagues, while pushing for political reform and good governance. We speak to Scott about the upcoming challenge to the city's earnings tax, the failed effort to keep the Rams in St. Louis, and much more. So today, we are talking to Scott Ogilvie, the alderman for the 24th Ward in the great city of St. Louis. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks, Alex. Good morning.
Where is the 24th Ward?
24th Ward is on the west side of the city, south of Forest Park, Dogtown, Clifton Heights, Cheltenham, and Ellendale neighborhoods.
All right, and how long have you lived in that part of the city?
Well, I've lived in it for 10 years and very close to it for my whole stint here in St. Louis since 1999.
So at what point did you think it was a good idea to run for alderman? Do you think it's a good idea now? Are you having regrets?
No, no, absolutely not. I mean, there's certainly some frustrations in the job, but I really enjoy this job, and hopefully I'm doing a good job, and I think there's some things that have happened over the last 5 years that may not have happened had I not been pushing them. So I'm proud of those things to a certain extent.
And yeah, well, definitely there's a lot to get to, and we'll get to that. But I am curious, just, you know, at what point are you, you know, most people know that you ride bikes. I mean, are you out on a bike ride and you think, man, something's not going right in my ward. Maybe I should step up and do it. I mean, that's a leap, right? Because I think a lot of people want to help the city. They believe in the city, but running for office is a whole nother, that's a level of commitment that most people do not get to.
Sure. It is a commitment. Campaigns are hard. Even, you know, relatively small local campaigns require a big investment of time and some investment of money for sure as well. You know, I was somebody who, before I ran, I paid attention to local politics, especially sort of development-related politics and preservation and transportation issues. So I knew a fair amount going in. I had not been an active participant though before I ran. So when I was running, I mean, we were certainly just kind of making it up as we went along. But I guess got enough things right that it worked out the first time.
And if I remember right, you didn't. For people who know the system in St. Louis well, we have primaries for the Board of Aldermen, even in layers of elections, and people have to show up multiple times to vote, even in these small elections. So you were an independent, correct, the first time?
That's right. I won election as an independent, which is pretty rare. Although most people that run on like a third party or independent, as third party independent candidates, don't try very hard, and I think that's why they don't succeed. But we tried really hard. But we have a partisan primary system, even for aldermen, and I think that's a mistake. I think we ought to have, we could have a primary, right, but everybody ought to be in the same primary.
I mean, the political parties don't mean much in terms of like whether your sidewalk is fixed in Dogtown.
They mean absolutely nothing. Local politics is not really about left-right issues for the most part. And I do think it discourages some people from trying to participate. So I'd be a big advocate of having nonpartisan local elections.
Sure. And so, all right, so you're elected and re-elected, correct?
That's right. So I've been in 5 years, so I've won one re-election so far.
All right, and so you're up for election when? What's the next?
Not until 2019.
2019. Does that feel? I imagine that feels pretty good. Right, kind of like you've got a couple years.
Sure,
to
you
work
know what has been interesting is how your sort of time horizon changes once you're in office. Yeah. Like something being done 6 months from now when I was first elected seemed like an eternity, and now it's like, oh, that's right around the corner. So, you have to learn to be super patient. So now 3 years from now suddenly doesn't seem like all that far away.
So, you know, 2019 sounds far away, but you're right, it's around the corner. And so let's touch on the shrinking of the Board of Aldermen. So the Board of Aldermen voted to reduce its own size by half.
We keep electing smaller and smaller people to the board.
What does that mean? Shorter people?
Maybe, yeah. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, so we...
I'm caught up. Sorry. Yeah.
In 2012, voters passed Proposition R, which I was a big advocate for. So we are going to go to 14 aldermen, 14 wards. In the 2023 election.
Right. And following that's the 2021
following the next
census.
Right. Exactly.
And so that's when the district, the wards will be redivided and redrawn.
Sure. They get redrawn
and we'll
every,
fight about all that.
Yeah, sure. They get redrawn every 10 years anyway. This time we'll just be drawing fewer wards.
And so an alderman will represent approximately 20,000 people instead of 10,000, which is what the
hopefully more
11,000.
Like 22 or 23.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
And so what's why is that important? So, you know, we've identified over the last year and a half in St. Louis kind of the problem of hyperlocal, the downside of hyperlocal jurisdictions and politics, right? Where you have so many layers of policymakers and decision makers and this kind of stuff. But there's a good side to it too, right? And so there was a real fight to decide to you know, reduce the number of wards in the city. Why is it important to reduce the number of wards, and what will be the positive outcome?
Well, I hope the positive outcome is that we elect people who are forced to represent a more diverse group of people and who have to keep sort of the destiny and the direction of the whole city in mind, rather than a relatively, you know, small number of people in their ward. And wards in St. Louis, they're not exact analogs to municipalities in St. Louis County, but there are some similarities. And across the city and across St. Louis County, we need less units of government, and we need the government we have to have more capacity. You know, the real downside of being a tiny municipality or being a small ward is that good policies don't travel very far. They're stuck in that one jurisdiction. And, you know, my hope is that the whole region continues to move to a place where we have fewer wards, fewer municipalities, more professional people running for office, and the idea that the fate of the region is all tied together and we cannot only look at what's going on in our block.
Mm-hmm. And so that hits on something that I think that you're known for, is having kind of a, and not everyone likes it probably, but having a bigger view of the city and the bigger picture, right? And I've seen you speak at the Board of Aldermen and have other aldermen insinuate or directly say, like, why are you talking, Scott? This isn't a 24th ward issue, or this doesn't, you know, we're talking about something in my ward, not your ward.
Yeah. So I've been told to stay in my lane.
Right. And so, I mean, and so what you're doing is appeals to me and a lot of other people to say, like, we have to have a bigger vision. And I've had the experience of calling an alder person and saying, hey, I would really hope you preserve this building, or I think it's important to our community. And they ask, well, where do you live? And I don't live in that ward. And they say, well, why do I care what you say? You know, and this idea that we exist in these silos is kind of frustrating to me, of course, and apparently to you. But and so I don't know where the question is there, but what's been your experience? I mean, why do you have a bigger picture, and why don't other people? Why do people want you to stay in your lane?
Well, it would be problematic to always be sort of poking your finger in other people's business or in what can be local decisions. But I think we've confined what we call, you know, a decision about one ward too broadly. And there really are issues that, you know, I would say to some extent, tax incentives and development and preservation and transportation issues. These things, you can't look at them as just ward by ward issues. The wards are just not that big. I mean, I represent about 2.5 square miles, and the decisions that happen inside of a ward very often affect the whole city. I mean, especially when we're talking about, you know, particular cases where I've, you know, been sort of critical of things going on in other wards, Ballpark Village, Paul McKee, Northside Regeneration, Stadium. Mm-hmm. These things, we're talking about utilizing what amounts to the whole city's resources to incentivize or do some of these things. So I think that everybody on the Board of Aldermen is more than entitled to have an opinion on it and to express that opinion.
Mm-hmm. And so, trying to think where to go with that one. What's an example of that working well? Is there an example of that working well? Where is there some collective decision making or collective action from the Board of Aldermen that's an example of how it can work?
So to define the problem, it's, you know, the problem is we sometimes have different laws in different wards, which is, it's confusing, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's hard to explain to a resident why something is legal on one side of the street and illegal on the other side of the street when they're both in St. Louis, and that is the case sometimes. You know, situations or cases where we've gone to a more consistent policy citywide. We've expanded preservation review to most of the city now, which is a good thing. Things like building inspections, thank God, we have almost the entire city covered now.
Now, wait a second. Like, I think everyone listening to this would assume, like, what does that mean? Like, was the city not covered by building inspections? Why would there possibly be any variation in something like building inspections across
our
city?
Yeah, I think it's hard to explain. but it's the case that for a long time, most of the last decade, some parts of the city you needed an occupancy inspection before you moved into a house or an apartment. Some parts of the city you didn't. And those were really just to ensure sort of basic safety things.
Mm-hmm. And that's ward by ward?
Aldermen were able
to mm-hmm. opt out of that. Or
exactly.
Something.
Exactly.
That's insane.
It is pretty crazy, yeah. You know, but I would say that in a lot of these things, we have not gone far enough. And I think this administration has left a lot of the decision-making on this stuff to the Board of Aldermen and has generally not pushed for an approach that says, look, we're one city, we have mm-hmm. common interests, common destiny, right. and we are going to try to do things consistently across the city. One area I think where we have had success is CDA and block grant funding, which is kind of inside baseball stuff, mm-hmm. but we finally have a system, and this was partially just demanded of us by the federal government, that aldermen are not able to sort of unilaterally spend block grant money from the right. federal government that now has a very sort of regimented application process that mm-hmm. that I think allows us to apply money to the highest impact projects and also means that everybody has to demonstrate the results they're getting if they want that money.
So for a long time, as I understand it, the money was basically divided by 28. Is that correct? And wards got to kind of came into their pot, and they got to decide what to do
sure.
with it.
Sure. Not, I mean, not exactly evenly right. because wards that had greater need got more funding.
Right.
But yeah, it was dispersed on a sort of more or less mm-hmm. equitable basis across the city, and rather than having, you know, kind of a administrative system that delivered that money, it was up to sort of individual personalities and relationships to distribute right. that money.
And so the new system's better, right?
It's better. It's much fairer. And I think the people working within that system really appreciate the new system.
And so, but it's certainly not a win for everybody, right? So if I remember correctly, through this process, there was a, I think it was called the High Point Food Bank. Is that correct? Is it?
Yeah, so that, well.
And that was in your ward, then it did not receive funding through this process. Is that
no,
or
it's,
correct
it,
me if I.
Right. No, no. They lost funding in the old system. The last year of the old system, they had been recommended to get funding because they, you know, met all their benchmarks, performed very well. They collected right. money, distributed food to elderly primarily. And they lost money just because of some other aldermen wanted money for some other stuff, which in my opinion was not as worthwhile. So the last year of the old system, they lost funding. They're doing just fine with the new, more fair system.
Gotcha. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. And speaking of that, recalls another kind of argument, fight, battle you had in your ward about gas stations and where people could buy alcohol and things like that. Where does that stand? There was an issue of buying, basically gas stations selling shots, right? Is this the...
Yeah, that didn't pass. So I tried right. to, you know, I think it's a little bit weird that...
You tried to limit that.
yeah.
Right.
Well, so I tried it citywide, not just
correct.
Within the ward. I think it's a little bit weird that, you know, we see this all the time. People buy a 50-milliliter bottle, it goes into a big gulp, and they're drinking and driving. I think mm-hmm. that, like, I'm not against alcohol. I love a cocktail. But the idea that we're just selling,
we're sort of enabling
yeah. drinking and driving yeah. everywhere throughout the city, I think we could pull back on that a little bit for public safety reasons.
So why doesn't something like that pass? Who's for it?
That one got beat because of a lobbyist. Beat mm-hmm. it. It was close. I lost that one by a vote or two.
So what can people do? I mean, and what's frustrating is when you view the city not as serving as an elected official, you hear things like that, and you kind of say, like, I mean, kind of like, you know, screw it. Like, these aldermen, the lobbyists run things. These good ideas get defeated by kind of a backdoor process, or at least not people going in front of the public arguing their case. What can you do as a resident, or even as someone? I mean, look, I live in University City. I work in St. Louis City. I spend as much money and as much time as I can in the city. I want the city to succeed. How can you support efforts like that, or aldermen, or ideas, or, you know, what do you do?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think it's the same across sort of all politics, and that is, politics is a contact sport, by which I mean you have to be involved, and you have to have, I think you have to develop relationships with people in office, you have to figure out who agrees with you, and then you have to participate in getting things passed. And, you know, I think I've gotten a number of positive legislative things passed over the last 5 years. Most of those successes happened when there was a group of people who were very helpful in getting legislation passed, who believed in it, helped write it, helped contact, you know, my colleagues.
And these are non-elected officials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who were at City Hall, and who were willing, I think, in a positive and proactive way to explain what we were doing and why we were doing something. Mm-hmm. I think if we want different policies, the mistake I see people make a lot is they sort of come in angry. Mm-hmm. They assume that...
They hang out on Twitter, they yell
right,
at all
they kind of cut people down before giving them a chance, right?
Right.
We have the Board of Aldermen, I think the 28 of us by and large, it is a very representative body of the city of St. Louis. And it is... We can enact better new policy, but we shouldn't... I think voters and residents should not expect that just happens by under its own power. People really need to participate and understand the process. And if they do, I think we tend to get decent results sometimes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that, and we could go down that road for a long time. So we'll come back and talk about policy. And as we get closer to 2019, and we're in our, you know, third and fourth season of the podcast, we'll really talk about the changes of the Board of Aldermen. But for now, let's dig into the NFL situation. So, in my view, St. Louis has gotten over this really fast, you know, in a way, like, shockingly fast. It was a little bit of, I mean, Stan helped by kind of crapping on the city on his way out, which he didn't have to do. He was going to be allowed to move anyway. But so he did that. People kind of said, you know, screw you, you're gone. But it went beyond that. I mean, people felt lied to by the NFL. They felt deceived. And I think, you know, being from the Midwest, I saw a little bit of this, like, you know, attitude from the task force and the individuals on there and the city of, you know, if we just work hard enough, we can achieve anything, you know, and the playing field in retrospect was so, tilted against the city and against the effort just to keep the Rams here. There was probably nothing they could do. So, but we had this belief, but the process was really ugly. And I don't think we mm-hmm. want to forget that, you know? And so what was your view of the process, and what was your role? What were some of the questions you brought up and your concerns about the process?
Sure. Well, I mean, the fallout for me is I think that we have a lot of residents who are very disappointed and alienated by, I think, some of the steps that the RSA, that the Stadium Task Force took, and quite frankly, that the mayor's office took in that process, particularly... You know, this idea that we had a law that required residents to vote on whether the city would allocate some type of funding to a new professional sports facility, that had been a law on the books for more than a decade. And before we ever had a chance to actually use it, kind of at the last minute, the RSA, via direction of the governor, and I would say cooperation with the mayor's office, sued to invalidate that law. And the city, quite frankly, did a bad job defending the law. We lost. We didn't appeal. And what voters had as an expectation of, okay, no matter what happens, we will be the final people to weigh in, yes or no, took that ability away from them. And I think that was regardless of whether the Rams stay or leave, that was a mistake, a big mistake in our relationship, sort of our, I guess, pact with with residents that we mm-hmm. are supposed to be here to represent their interests. Now, beyond that, from my perspective, the stadium was just, and it should have been obvious, I think, was a very bad financial deal for the city. And we got I think pro stadium people gave a very unrealistic take on the financial return to the city, especially given the fact that, you know, St. Louis County was out, the state was not putting in a particularly large amount of money. The burden of funding the public portion of the stadium was very much on the city, very much on our 320,000 residents. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, we just can't do these big things anymore as 320,000 people. We can't fund an existing dome, an existing convention center, a new stadium, if it's not a big regional effort.
So I'm certain that the mayor's office would say that they went to court and defended, you know, the law that said people could vote on the stadium and things. What would you say to that? Because I know they would just simply say, well, that's not true. We defended it in court. We lost, unfortunately, and we moved ahead.
Yeah, well, I think you got to understand the real dynamic. The real dynamic is that the RSA sued us. The mayor's office appoints people to the RSA. So the mayor's office is partially in control of the decisions that the RSA
makes. So you would imagine the RSA would not have sued the city if the mayor had said, you simply can't.
Absolutely not.
Right.
And in fact, what should be more obvious is the fact that if the mayor's office had said, don't do this, and the RSA had continued, the mayor's office could have said, look, we're not even gonna do this process. We're not going to go down this road if you've taken away.
We're simply not going to, as a city, we're not going to cooperate.
Yeah, we won't have a bill. We're not exactly. Gonna, yeah. So the mayor's office cooperated in the lawsuit, I think. I think Ray Hartman did the best job reporting on that. I mean, it just is what it is. And the messaging from the mayor's office is something very different, but I agree with them on some things, but I stridently disagree with them on that approach.
So why in your view, and this isn't something new, but the city goes after these, the bigger the project, the harder they go after it, time and time again. And I've been in town 12 years, and I've seen it happen 7, 8, 9, 10 times now, you know, whether it's a casino or Ballpark Village or City Arch River and the Arch Grounds or all these things. It's like the bigger thing someone can bring to them, the more they're on board with it. Why do we have that? And as you say, we can't. So the city is 320,000 people. That's 11% of our region. I mean, we're a big metro region. I mean, a top 20 metro region in the nation, and we could do big things collectively if we decided to. The city seems determined just to go it alone on these things over and over again. And there are lots of examples. City Arch River is a county tax involved as well. I mean, there are examples of cooperation, but what is it? Why does the city go for it? And maybe more specifically, why do your colleagues on the Board of Aldermen go for it? Because I look at these wards that have their own challenges and sometimes very significant, and they too seem to be drawn into this, the bigger the better. You know, Northside regeneration, great. My ward is suffering from A, B, C, D. You got this great dream. Sign me up. Like, how does that happen? What are people trying to do, and how are people talked into this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's just St. Louis that kind of has this affliction. I think a lot of cities kind of go through the same thing. And there are big things we should try to do. And in some cases, you know, we have to go it alone because the state or the region won't help us. So although I agree some of the things we have gone after have just kind of been folly at this point. You know, I think stadium... Certainly, Northside regeneration is just a slow motion disaster. It's a total failure. 10 years later,
the thing people would say is, so there's a huge TIF, you know, $300 million, $400 million. It doesn't matter how much it is because none of it's been used because nothing's been built.
Right.
And so somebody would say, well, we tried and it didn't cost us anything. But and I don't know if you would agree with this, but my view is, let's assume that our aldermen are whatever it's worth, they're our civic energy, right? They're our policymakers. Along with the mayor and other people, and they're using all their energy and intelligence and time on crap like this that doesn't do anything. So maybe, I don't know if that's a very interesting topic, maybe we should transition into what are the things that would make St. Louis better? Like what are the projects, big or small, that we really need to be focused on?
Sure. So, the first thing I'll say about that is we are in the city of St. Louis and large parts of St. Louis County are in a tough spot now. And the statistic I use a lot is that the region's population has grown by like 12% since 1970, and our geographic area has grown by 400%. So the St. Louis region has sprawled faster than any other place. We got more highway miles per person. We have this enormous amount of real estate and not enough demand for it across the region. And what we need in the city is more organic demand for real estate, more organic demand for places to live, and you only get those things through population growth. So how do we grow population? Well, it's the same kind of things we've been hearing about for a long time, but we need better public safety, and we need to keep families here. We're actually doing okay in terms of people moving in, you know, younger people. That's terrific. The challenge is making sure that they stay here and that they raise families here. We can't keep churning through people who live here 10 years and then move out because they have children. So we need to do a better job, I think, addressing the needs of residents that are already here. And I think those are the things you do that make people stay and ultimately attract new residents as well.
Right, and my argument, maybe yours as well, has been that that's not an NFL stadium. Like, that's
it's not ultimately
going to make you want to stay in your neighborhood, right?
Right, and so to kind of get to the original question, you know, what's the opportunity cost of devoting tons of people's time at City Hall to a stadium or tons of people's time at City Hall to Paul McKee and Northside? It's that both of those things, not a dollar spent on either of those things and not a minute of time on either of those things, does anything for somebody who lives here now.
Right.
It's all about catering. Those initiatives are all about catering to visitors, catering to tourists, catering to some imaginary person who may live here in the future. And I think that really misses the point in that we have a couple hundred thousand residents, and we ought to have a more laser focus on what their quality of life is like.
Well, I've heard you say before that the city can't be proactive. And they'll say, like, well, we don't have the staff to be proactive in planning, or we don't have the staff to be proactive in rezoning parts of the city and stuff like that. But they clearly have time to spend, right? Like,
right. So we don't have enough people to do everything. So it's a question of what are we allocating people's time on? And I think that, you know, the challenge is that it's sort of easy for people to work on a singular project. Like,
right.
You can wrap your head around just stadium as an example, what a stadium is, where it goes.
You get a yes or no answer at
exactly.
the end. You build something or you don't.
And you know whether you succeeded or didn't succeed. You know if you're moving that, you know, moving the ball down the field, et cetera. I think it's just, it's a much more messy, complicated thing to do sort of the quality of life thing for, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in residential neighborhoods in North and South St. Louis. It's harder to tell if you're succeeding or failing. Mm-hmm. It's hard to point to what you've done. But nonetheless, those things are just more important, even if they're sort of harder to hang your hat on at the end.
Yeah, my wish is that if I could wave my development wand, is that St. Louis would become the city of sidewalks. Like, if we were known as the city that had the best sidewalks of any major city, like, that would be awesome, right? Like, people would use it. People would, maybe it would be dorky and maybe it's a bad idea. But anyway, something like that would just be, you could pick anything though. The point is, like, you can pick a target and you can go after it. You can define yourself as a city. And we keep defining ourselves as, you know, going a stadium place or a ballpark village place. Or, I mean, it's just anyway. I don't want to hear myself say that anymore. I say it all the time. And you touched on something about the sprawl around the region. And one of the things I stumbled upon a while ago that I repeat often, because I think people in a way don't believe it, is that since 1970, between St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Charles County, we've added 1% population.
There's been no growth. Yeah.
Basically no growth across those three counties, and yet there's been hundreds of thousands of people have been moving around, right?
Yep. So I spoke at an event, and that was kind of this week, and I kind of introduced those exact same stats. And I said, you know, the county in particular continues to just shoot itself in the foot. Mm-hmm. More than $1 billion were spent in the 90s on bridges and highway infrastructure to St. Charles from St. Louis County. And the very predictable result is population decline in North St. Louis County and in North St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It's not a surprise.
And yet all these projects, this isn't just like MoDOT saying, hey, we built a beautiful bridge on budget and it's holding up, it's in good condition, yay for us. It's policymakers saying, these bridges and these highways did exactly what we wanted them to do. We built St. Louis Mills Mall. We built more, you know, there are more office buildings going up. And that's like, it's the epitome of like losing the big picture, right? I mean, we closed three malls and we built two more. Like, how, you know, what are we doing to ourselves? And at what cost, right?
Oh, and, you know, at huge cost to the city of St. Louis. I mean, the transportation decisions that the region has made have absolutely, I would say, stolen billions of dollars of wealth from people in the city. Mm-hmm. Billions of dollars of property value, well, maybe hundreds of millions. I don't know. I'm sort of
we'll go with billions. But billions isn't even a big number anymore. It's
a
just
lot,
like, you know,
a lot.
A stadium's worth.
It's, we've continually devalued where people live today in order to provide more value to where people might move.
So what would you say to people? And I read something that really still resonates when from the Mapping Decline book, which everyone, a lot of people know. If you don't, check it out. It's called Mapping Decline by Colin Gordon. He's a professor at the University of Iowa, I believe. And what he said is that every person who kind of moved out of North St. Louis City to the county initially, to places like, you know, Florissant and Spanish Lake, that move represented an individual success. So they were moving up, they were getting a yard, they were getting maybe a single family home for the first time in their family's lineage, their whole history, but it was a collective failure, you know? And I think that's still something that happens today where someone grows up in, or, you know, lives in the city, they have three kids, they move to Clayton or Kirkwood for the schools or for a yard or whatever the reason is. Good for them, right? It's not a personal thing. It's not that person sucks because they left our city. They're acting in a very rational basis based on the policies we've enacted as a region, and then the region fails. Is that a...
Yeah, I mean, we've just made those decisions so easy and painless, you mm-hmm. know, because there's no... I mean, land is cheap in St. Charles. Mm-hmm. Houses are cheap. The commute, now that we spent $1 billion on bridges to St. Charles, the commute is easy.
Right.
I think we've...
Yeah, so I guess what would you say to people? Because people would say, like when you bring this up, they either say, well, the other things they say, well, people left because of racial issues. You know, black people moved to North City and white people left. And now everyone's leaving. And they left because of crime. And a lot of those, they conflate those two issues a lot of times. So what do you say to someone? I mean, we want people to move to the city. What do you say to an individual who says, I have a very rational reason for leaving?
Yeah, so those are tough questions that a lot of, you know, every Rust Belt or older city has dealt with. Why has population declined so much in St. Louis over the last 40 or 50 years? It's the confluence of a lot of different things. You know, it's the confluence of us making a little bit worse decisions as a region, us... I think suffering from some of the ills that a lot of places have suffered from a little bit more, a state that has become very antagonistic to its urban areas. You know, all those things have added up. And, you know, even in Chicago, for instance, parts of Chicago suffer from the exact same ills as parts of St. Louis. But Chicago is 250 square miles? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a real penalty you pay for leaving Chicago.
Mm-hmm. You're so far out that you're,
right.
Yeah, it really changes.
Exactly. And so there's not that type of commuting mm-hmm. penalty in the St. Louis region, which makes it very easy for people. And, you know, it's not that the city did that to itself, but to a large extent, the region did that to the city. And so kind of go back to my earlier story. I was talking about these things, and somebody says, okay, but what do we do now? And I said, well, the first thing we have to do is we have to actually learn from those mistakes, which I don't think we've necessarily done yet. When you know, until just a year or two ago, St. Louis County was continuing to push just highway expansion, construction everywhere, all the time, solution to every problem, and ignoring a lot of other, I think, enormous issues that were staring it right in the face, like constitutional policing. You know, there's other yeah. things we could be spending our time
But the county has a problem where the county executive isn't all that powerful politically, right? I mean, you have yeah, 90 municipalities, you have unincorporated areas, you have it's a mess out there to try to they can't force municipalities to do certain things. And
well, I think that the effort has not been made to a large extent.
Well, this
so
is
I think
true,
we don't
right?
really
so,
we don't really know how right. how powerful right. a county executive could be.
No one's tried to figure that out yet.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the other thing that people are that's upcoming for city voters and people cite sometimes as a reason to leave the city, as well as the earnings tax. So when I read up on the history of the earnings tax, it's a post-World War II funding mechanism that kind of came and went for a while. It's been in place now kind of consistently since the 1950s. It's a 1% tax on your earnings if you are a resident of the city, even if you work outside the city, and it's a 1% tax on anyone who works inside the city, no matter where they live.
Correct.
Is that a disincentive? Is it, do you think that's a reason for either population decline, jobs moving to Clayton? Is it a negative for the city to have the earnings tax?
Overall, no. It's an enormous positive because it allows the city... People want services. Mm-hmm. I mean, the city exists to provide services to residents that no one else can provide, like police, fire, EMS, building inspection, corrections, prosecution, paving streets, fixing bridges, et cetera, et cetera. And the earnings tax allows the city to do all of those things and to do some of those things very well. I mean, the city has... We have some real successes in terms of service delivery. We have the nation's best urban park. We have a top-notch fire department, top-notch EMS. And you know, those departments actually really save people's lives on a daily basis when people are most in need. You can't do those things without an adequate revenue stream. And in terms of, you know, are we ever going to be able to stabilize population, grow population in the city? I hope so, but we're not going to do that with no services, by not providing any services.
Yeah, my take has always been if you build a place people want to be, they'll come here. The incentive, the draw far outweighs negatives. And you look across the country in terms of the earnings tax, and I don't have all of them in front of me, but you know, Cincinnati, Ohio has 2.1% earnings tax. New York City,
Philadelphia, 4.5%. Yeah,
right. And people are, but everyone is, does anyone live in New York anymore? Is that a popular place?
Nobody. It's too busy. Nobody goes there anymore.
So, but the other point that I think people need to realize is, so let's take this at a very basic level. It takes X amount of money to run a city.
Yep.
So you have to have that revenue from somewhere. You
gotta have it from somewhere.
And so the argument, in a sense, that people sometimes get to is the earnings tax is not the right way, so let's do it some other way. But the thing that they miss, and I think that's maybe most important to city residents, is that in a place like St. Louis, where we're 65 square miles, we service an entire region, whether it's for sports games or other things. So a huge amount of the services provided by the city are consumed by people who do not live in the city.
That's true.
So, right, part of the way to capture that is the earnings tax. Do you know what percentage comes from people living outside the city?
The percentage paid?
Yeah, in terms of like
I don't know that off the top of my head. But I think you highlight... So I think what people need to understand, and which has not been reported, and I think most people don't have an appreciation of, is that the state has to authorize every tax a city or county uses before we can use that revenue source. So the state authorized the earnings tax. The state does not... Even if the state takes away the earnings tax, there aren't other options out there. We don't... The Missouri Constitution caps what your property tax rate is. Law caps what the sales tax rate is. It's not like...
Right. So you would have to go and change the law and say, now our sales tax is 17%.
Well, like, the state would have to do that.
Correct.
The city cannot do that on our own, and we cannot raise property tax rate very much higher than what it is right now. So there is no other alternate source of revenue you can go to that even comes close to the revenue that the earnings tax brings in. And the earnings tax is actually, it is a fair, equitable way to raise revenue. If you're not working, you're not paying it. If you're retired, you're probably not paying it. If you make a lot of money, you're paying a lot. And you know, other taxes, other local taxes especially, tend to be regressive. They fall more heavily on lower income residents. And the earnings tax is really one example that is at least equitable across the income scale.
Right. I've heard opponents of the tax call the earnings tax regressive, which just means they don't understand what regressive means. So very quickly, you know, if you're a millionaire and you buy, you know, you go out to a restaurant or you make $10,000 a year and you go out to a restaurant, you pay the exact same amount of tax. That's a regressive tax because no matter what, you know, it's not indexed. So, you're right. It seems to be a fair way to generate revenue. And very quickly, we're at this point because someone, an individual, decided that our city should get rid of the earnings tax, and no one was able to stop him from getting this in front of voters statewide, correct? So the rest of the state decided that St. Louis has to reaffirm that it wants to keep a third of its revenue every 5 years.
It's crazy, right? And so that person is...
It sounds crazy. I said that, and I knew it was crazy, and then I said it, and it sounded crazier. And
it's totally crazy. there's really no comparable situation. It's not like Chesterfield reauthorizes all of its sales taxes every 5 years. or you know, it's not like Clayton reauthorizes every one of its property taxes every 5 years. It's crazy, and it's only because of one person. It's not because residents of the city or region have any particular dislike for the earnings tax. Mm-hmm. In fact, residents of the city like it. They reauthorized it by 88%.
Right, 88%. So this has also been missing in a lot of things. It's kind of like, hey, here's an opportunity to vote.
And all those people either pay it now or did pay it in the past before they retired.
Can you imagine any other issue that 88% of city residents would agree on? I honestly can't think of, I don't know.
Puppies? I don't know. Puppies. Yes. but I think you highlight...
Too many cat people. I don't know.
You highlight the fact that Missouri... we almost joke about it now, but Missouri's... campaign finance and ethics systems are unbelievably broken. When you allow, we have a single billionaire now driving policy decisions, political decisions for hundreds of thousands of people, and he has really no stake in this. You know, he will, if the earnings tax were to go away, he would never feel the impact of that in terms of public safety declines, you know, loss of services. He's got no skin in the game other than, you know,
more than another individual.
He is a billionaire in a sandbox playing around with policy. But, you know, the fact is residents, they want services. They want police officers. They want firefighters. They want public schools. The politics of Rex Singfeld just are not... One, they don't work, and two, they are not...
Right, let's not lose track of that, right?
Right, like, they're wrong. Right. And
because Kansas is trying them.
And they're not the politics of the city, of people in the city, or really people in the region.
Right. Well, with that, we're just about out of time. Is there anything else you want to add? Anything we missed, or another point to get across? The bond issue? Let's talk about that very quickly, right?
Bond issue. It's my bill. It's the second thing on the ballot on April 5th, Proposition F. It's not a tax increase, which voters should know. And we are buying, we're replacing things like ambulances, fire trucks, trash trucks that last a relatively long time but are expensive. Mm-hmm. We're also doing other upgrades to things like the city's assessment system, bridge maintenance, sort of the basic things the city needs to do.
You're trying to run a city.
Right.
You're such an idealist. What a dreamer.
Yeah, the ambulances are out there. They run every day. They respond constantly to things. And I got a text from a firefighter, texted me a picture of an ambulance on a tow truck the other day. So these things are old. We can replace a lot of them without a tax increase. So I'd certainly ask voters to vote yes on Proposition F.
And this, in a way, came out of a past failed bond issue, right? There was a big bond issue that was layered up with lots of stuff that people voted down.
Big one last year, yeah. Although we should mention that a majority of voters supported it. It got 61.5%.
Right. It
was a tax increase. The fact is, unfortunately, the city's charter requires a 2/3 majority for these things, even though state law does not.
How do we fix the city charter? So this is the last. I have two more things. So this is one where. Some of the suggestions I make or some of the dreams I have for policy, people just say, well, you have to go to the state for that. Or, sorry, that's part of the city charter. Well, screw it. So, like, it's there to change, right? This is not an infallible document that dictates how we run for the next 50 years. How do you go about that, and do you see any energy to readdress the city charter?
Sure. So we did it with Prop R. That was a big one. That was a charter
change.
And that's
the reduction in the Board of Aldermen.
Exactly.
Yep.
So the way you... And this is one of my real frustrations with local government, is that we sort of do not pay attention to, we don't pay enough attention to sort of the rules of the game, you know, the charter and city ordinances. We're not spending enough time and effort building the capacity and desire to change these things to work better. They are kind of boring, so that the challenge, you know, in terms of selling these ideas to voters is that they're kind of dry and boring. You know, what percentage do you need for a bond issue? Like, it's not going to get people real fired up.
Yeah, you're not getting a lot of texts and phone calls from constituents saying, "Hey, can we come over? I want to have coffee and talk about the city charter."
Right. But they are important because they determine fundamentally what the city can and can't do, and therefore elected officials should pay more attention to them and should do, I think, a better job educating people on what's in there and what's not in there. And if we do that, when you go to change these things, a lot of times there's not actually any opposition to it.
Right.
You just need to figure out, you know, looking forward, what within the charter is not going to work for us now, or it's not going to work for us in a decade, and get those things out there to try to change them. So
well, that's where there seems to be a lot of opportunity. So and I forget who told me this, so maybe it's someone listening. They kept calling St. Louis a permeable city. We're like, you can kind of do what you want here. You know, there are certain rules. But everything from creating city museum to changing the city charter, you can do these things, and there's not a lot of roadblocks, but there's a lot of inertia. You know, there's just a lot of like, I don't care about that. You're not going to make me care, but maybe I'll let you do it. Right. And so it seems like there's opportunity. I mean, real opportunity if you get a group of aldermen and active citizens to really change the way things are run.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And it's kind of one of the exciting things about living in a place that's kind of a small, big city, is that when these things are feasible, they are within people's grasp if they work for them, but they still affect a big enough number of people that they're meaningful. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, like the city museum, that's not a political thing, obviously, but that's kind of the great part about St. Louis is that you can get away with so much stuff here. If you own it and you just go for it,
right.
There's really, I think, unlimited potential for people creatively to do stuff like that.
That may have been part of the city that didn't require an occupancy permit or something, I think.
There were no inspections going on there.
So, but now it's there. So last thing, I always end with asking someone, you know, what's it going to take for St. Louis to be a future great city? And a lot of times I think other cities still do this, but it used to be like if your city's growing, you're good. Things are great. Just add population forever and you're great. I think that attitude's changing a little bit. And we've covered a lot of ground, and you've kind of weighed in on what will make St. Louis great. But what's your kind of final thought on what needs to happen for this to be a great city?
All my neighborhood needs, and I mean this sincerely, is a free high school. That's it. We got a free high school. 24th Ward is a totally functional, sustainable place, great place for people to live and spend their whole lives there. Big picture for the region, the most impactful investment is Northside Southside Metrolink. I believe that 100%. The next thing, and it's a big nut to crack, but the next thing is really reorganizing city and county government. So hopefully the city is one. I like to call it St. Louis County expansion. So that St. Louis County includes St. Louis City. So that when we're making decisions on a regional basis, we're all one jurisdiction. That has got to be the future of the region.
All right. Well, with that, we'll sign off. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Alex.
This has been the Future Great City Podcast on nextstl.com. Thanks for joining us. Be informed, be engaged, be part of what's next. Nextstl.com.